Welcome to Your Future Starts Now, the go-to podcast for extraordinary women who are ready to step into their next chapter with authentic confidence. I'm your host, Gia Lacqua, empowerment coach, motivational speaker, children's book author, and girl mom. Whether you're a corporate powerhouse or an entrepreneur, this show is designed for you. Your Future Starts Now is more than just a podcast. It's a movement towards rewriting the rules of success for high-achieving women. Are you ready to get unstuck and step into your next chapter? If so, you're exactly where you need to be. Your future starts now. Welcome to Your Future Starts Now. I'm your host, Gia Lacqua. Thanks for tuning in today. I am thrilled to welcome Kristen Radke to the show. Kristen is a highly experienced and respected clinical therapist based in Arizona. With extensive experience providing counseling to individuals, couples, and families, Kristen uses modern therapeutic techniques combined with biblical wisdom to help clients heal from anxiety, depression, relationship conflicts, and shame. Prior to her private practice, Kristen worked in a variety of social work and mental health roles for over a decade. She served as a behavioral therapist for children with developmental and behavioral disorders, as a social worker for children in foster care, and as a victims advocate in a police department. She's licensed as a clinical social worker in the state of Arizona, where she lives with her husband and daughter. Kristen, thanks for being with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Great. So today we are talking about mental health. And, you know, before we jump into that, Kristen, maybe you could just tell our listeners a little bit about your personal backstory and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a master's from Case Western Reserve University in Ohio. And I actually grew up in California. So after my master's, went back to California, jumped in, ended up working with in-home behavioral treatment for kids who were at risk of a higher level of care. So go in there, create some behavioral goals, work with parents, work with the kids, make sure that they could stay where they were. And then from there, went into working in foster care as a child protective services social worker. So worked alongside the court and families, foster children, foster parents, all of that. And from there, I got married. My husband and I, we moved to Arizona and started working as a victim advocate in the police department. Had some great experiences there, jumped into community mental health, then to a group practice. And then after I had my daughter, I jumped into the private practice world and started that just about a year ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Amazing work that you've done and that you are doing. Your bio is so interesting. Talk to us a little bit about how you integrate modern therapeutic approaches with biblical wisdom in your counseling practice. And also talk to us a little bit about what benefits you've observed from this integration.
Yeah, I look at people holistically. So I see the perspective of we're not just one dimensional. So we have spiritual lives, right? And I'm a Christian therapist. I believe in Jesus. So I see just even bringing in the Holy Spirit, or even just me just asking the Lord during a session, like, you know, what wisdom do I need to give this person? What do I need to talk about? Even talking to them about their faith, where they're at, and integrating that with some of the more modern techniques like cognitive behavioral therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, emotionally focused therapy. I find that when you integrate the two, it addresses the whole of the person. And so instead of just saying, hey, like, you need to work on these coping skills and this is going to help you heal, mm-hmm. we're looking at, hey, let's bring Jesus into these places that have been hurt. Let's, let's help you heal in a more holistic way. And I feel like people have actually experienced more complete healing and more long-term healing by combining the two.
So fascinating, because yeah. when you think about wellness and well-being, there's the mind-body aspect and then there's the spiritual aspect, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm curious, in your practice, do you find that the clients you work with are sort of disconnected from the spiritual piece, or they feel really solid in that piece of their life?
Most of them have some sort of background spiritually. You know, they grew up in it, or they used to go, or mm-hmm. And then they've just kind of lost touch with, you know, that side. And they haven't gone to church in a while, or they don't have a community, or they had a bad experience in the church. Or they just weren't like taught, like, how do you sit in relationship with God? I think a lot of people grew up in kind of a legalistic way. And so it almost produces anxiety for them. Mm-hmm. And when we help them have relationship with God, it creates more of a peace. And so instead of having to pursue and do more and be more and be better, and they're learning how to be still, and they're learning contemplative prayer, and they're learning how to just bring their anxieties before God, right? So there's scripture that talks about cast your anxiety before him. Like, and a lot of people don't know how to do that because they think that they have to do more and be more. And so we work a lot on being able to sit in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is so beautiful. I love what you said about this feeling of having to do and be more, but it's not about that, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's incredible. So, you know, a lot of high achieving women and listeners, I think, struggle with anxiety. As we know, it's very prevalent, especially in this day and age. And specifically, while it's not a clinical diagnosis, I think a lot of women struggle with high functioning anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about that concept and how it presents in high achieving women.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see this when someone comes in, right, and they're doing all of the things. They're actually functioning pretty well, or what they think is pretty well in their life, right? They've got the job. They may be running their own business. They've got kids. They've got a husband. They're doing all the things. They're checking off all the tasks. But at the same time, they have this almost this feeling of restlessness, this kind of restless, anxious feeling that drives them to keep doing more. And so it's this cycle of like, well, I have this restless feeling, I need to do more. And then I do more, and then I still have this restless feeling, so I need to do even more. And so it's this anxiety that continues to push them to perform, which oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes comes from a place of perfectionism, comes from a place of not knowing how to slow down, how to rest, how to unhurry, if you will.
Yes. So relatable. And you just described my life for many years in the corporate world.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until 2018 that I was diagnosed with anxiety, but it had been lifelong for me. But it wasn't until I burned out and I was having heart palpitations and thought I was having a heart attack and really just ran myself into the ground until I received a diagnosis. And so I think it's a great point that it sort of becomes part of us in the sense of like driving our success in some twisted way.
Yeah.
And so there's a big part of anxiety. And I know this is, you talk a lot about this in the work that you do, and I want to get into this in a minute, but there's a lot of it that's wrapped up in our identity. So it's kind of like, if this is part of who am I without it?
Right. Right.
And that can be really scary. And also if you think about, well, this hustle culture or this drive to constantly do and constantly go, if that in my mind has attributed to my success in some way, you know, I was petrified to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, who am I if I let that go? And so I think that's a really hard shift and transformation for people to go through. But talk to us a little bit about kind of your view of anxiety and how it relates to identity.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that I talk to my clients about often is that a diagnosis is not your identity. And that goes for anxiety. Anxiety is not your identity. If you are struggling with anxiety, it's a collection of symptoms and it's telling your body something. And it's usually telling your body, you need to slow down and you need to deal with what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's symptoms are communication. And so it's telling your body, hey, something's going on and we need to figure out what it is. But it's not saying that you have this thing called anxiety and you're going to have to deal with this for the rest of your life. Buckle up. Like, that's not what it's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that I talk about in my sessions with clients is, hey, like when you're even talking about it, don't say my anxiety. It's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. Like it's something that can go away, but it requires you to pay attention. It requires you to be intentional, requires you to slow down, to also sit in discomfort and learn to be able to sit with that for a minute. Because it's, you know, obviously in therapy, like it's not one size fits all. So part of the therapeutic process is also figuring out where is this coming from? Because a collection of symptoms like anxiety could also be the result of trauma. It could be something that you haven't dealt with, right? It could be also, actually right now, I feel like I have an influx of clients that their anxiety is actually as a result of learning that they were not allowed to share or process or express emotion. Mm-hmm. So it's more of like a lot of stuffed emotions, right? So we're working on helping them to process and have what I call emotional release. So we're trying to normalize that process, right? So anxiety can also be the result of a very strict upbringing where performance was really pushed. Like, you know, get the good grades, get into the good college, do the good job, make sure you do your chores, make sure you're not doing A, B, and C, don't do drugs, like all the different things, whatever it was. It can be as a result of, you know, kind of growing up in a legalistic home. Like there's so many roots to this and possibilities that part of the process is learning where is this coming from first. Mm-hmm. And then once you figure out, okay, where this is coming from, then you can start to do some of the work, right? And one of the things that you said that was really interesting to me was when you shared your story, is that you didn't even know what it was and you were having heart palpitations and you, you know, and a lot of people that have come to me, that's actually their story too. They start out by going to the ER and thinking they're having a heart attack. And then they keep going to the ER and the ER keeps telling them, you're fine. We did an EKG. We've done all these tests. They send you a cardiologist. Like they've done all these things.
Yep.
And then eventually they go, hey, this is actually it's presenting physiologically, but it's actually mental, because there's a connection, right? That mind body connection. And then they show up and they see me and they're like, hey, so I have heart palpitations and this is what's going on. And it's amazing because when they start to process and deal with what's going on internally, the heart palpitations slowly go away. And they're like, mm-hmm. I didn't actually believe it. I thought that that was just insulting when they told me this was more of a mental thing.
Yes, it's so true. It's a great point. And it is the physiological manifestations of unmanaged chronic stress and anxiety. And I think oftentimes we ignore the initial warning signs.
Yeah.
And we tell ourselves it's nothing, not a big deal, take an Advil, right? But the reality is it's probably something much greater that's going on. And I love what you said about symptoms are a form of communication, just like our feelings and our emotions, even when they're hard or difficult.
Right.
They're a form of communication and we can choose to listen to them and tap into them or not.
Right.
And And I think that's a great point as well. And so now I think it is becoming, I think the awareness is greater. I think companies are trying to do more to prevent and address burnout and more of a focus on holistic wellness. I think we still have a long ways to go.
Yes.
But you know, I do think it's important. And also, you know, you mentioned people feeling dismissed. I remember going to the cardiologist, I did my stress test and wear the monitor and all of that thinking, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with my heart. And before this cardiologist, very smart doctor, had any of my test results, you know, and he's hearing me ramble on about my symptoms, my experience. And he looks at me and he goes, you're going to be fine. You're fine. Your heart is fine. It's almost like he didn't even need the test to tell him what was going on. Because again, I think he's seen it so many times.
Yeah.
Right. And so it is so fascinating. I would love to know, based on your experience, how, for those people who might be struggling in those moments, how do we slow down? Right. As you said, how do we learn to sit in the discomfort? What is a good first step that people can take?
Yeah, I mean, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And obviously, I think this can be different from person to person, depending on the situation. But as a general rule, how do we slow down? I mean, one of the things that I would say with that is that we need to be aware of our yes. We need to be aware of, if you could sit down and you could write down, like, what are the, all the things that you're doing, all the yeses in your life, and write it all down. And then maybe write another column of all the things that you value. And I'm not talking about goals. I'm talking about, like, I value my family. I value community. I value health. I value, and I want you to look and compare the list. And I want you to see, it is what I'm doing in alignment with what I value. Because I may say that I value community, and yet I spend all of my time hustling, if you will, and kind of continuing to promote this hustle culture. And if those things do not align and you are experiencing anxiety, it's time to say no to a couple things. And that's easier said than done, but it's time to step away from a couple things. It's time to look at your schedule. One of the things that there's a couple books I could, you know, recommend for the listeners. One of them is The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. And another one is called To Hell with the Hustle. I would start with The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's a great book. And one of the things he talks about is that God created us for rhythm. And when we get out of rhythm and when we're a part of this kind of hustle culture, these things do happen. We do have anxiety. We end up with depression. We end up feeling like there's more and we need to do more. We need to be more. And like, but I've done it and now I'm here and I still feel like this. And we end up scrolling more and we end up binging more, whether that's food or Netflix. All of these things are symptoms of feeling this anxious restlessness, you know, that we can't seem to put our finger on. So one of the rhythms that he talks about is taking a weekly Sabbath. And maybe even if you don't believe and you don't have faith, that might even look like you taking a digital rest day. It means no computers, no phones, no TV, get outside, do some things that fill your cup, but like take out all of the digital things in your life, turn them all off. You don't need to do it. It's amazing how many people would tell me, I can't do that. Well, what if someone needs to contact me? What if this, what if that? Start telling your people, hey, on this day of this week, of every week, I will be taking a complete day to absolutely do nothing digitally. I'm going to turn my phone off. If something is needed, you can tell me tomorrow or you can tell me the day before, but I am not doing it on that day because we need it. We need that rhythm. We need to be able to step away and not feel like anything has to be done and to really take an entire day with our families, hand make some pizza, like do some puzzles, play a game, take a walk. Like there's so many things that you can do. So those are just a couple things that come to mind.
Those are powerful, powerful tools, or even setting the auto response on your text messages now, right? You have that ability that, you know, I'm driving or I'm not available today or whatever. So great advice. I love what you said about creating a list of your yeses, right? The things that you're focusing your energy on, what you're doing, and then seeing how they line up to your core values and what's important to you, right? And I think you'll very clearly see, are you living in alignment? And to your point, maybe there's even a third column of what am I saying no to? And I know for me, you know, years ago, that list would have been very short. And when you look at that, you realize, okay, maybe there are some more things that need to go on this third list under the no category. And it is hard. It is hard when you're used to saying yes to everything and being the go-to person. And you are that over-functioner, the high achiever who takes everything on more than your fair share, more than your load, I think is really important.
And something to do, you could even make another list, fourth list, if you will. What is it costing you? So you may be saying yes to some things and no to others, and that may be a short list. But technically, you're saying no to some things that you want to be saying yes to, like more time with your family or time alone for yourself or, you know, time for your marriage or time with each one of your kids, whatever it is. And so what is your, what are your yeses costing you? And if they're not worth it, that kind of helps put things in perspective.
I love that. Love that. What is it bringing you and what is it costing you? Is a great sort of formula to work with. Yeah. Great framework. And you talked earlier about, you know, people sort of getting to the source, right, of what is creating that angst and the restlessness and that drive. And, you know, it's one of the reasons I became a trauma-informed coach is because not only through my own personal healing journey, but as I work with more and more high-achieving women, I realize that there's a huge percentage of them who are dealing with unresolved trauma, capital T or lowercase t, right? Things that they may not have acknowledged, or they've acknowledged but have not yet healed. And so often once they have that moment of, oh, this is related, right? It is just eye-opening. It is just that aha moment for them. And so, you know, identifying the source is a really good point, because we can identify, a lot of us can identify with the symptoms of perfectionism and people pleasing and overachieving and external validation, right? And some of that is conditioning, societal conditioning. You know, some of it maybe is generational. To your point, a lot of your clients, right, are dealing with processing emotions that they've never processed or have suppressed. I think a lot of us have that experience, right? Of like, we weren't allowed to feel certain things, or we were told certain feelings were bad.
Right.
Right. And so what did we do? We suppressed them because, like, oh, we're not supposed to have those feelings.
Right. Right. They're not acceptable.
They're not acceptable. And so what does that say about yourself? And what are the stories we tell ourselves about who we are when we're having those feelings? It's such such great advice to really tap into that and get to the source. And obviously working with a therapist or coach, right, with the right expertise and qualifications can be really fundamental in moving through that process.
I mean, and to your point, it's being able to process through that, you might find that some of those things are trauma responses, right? They're conditioned trauma responses that says, this is how I grew up, and this is how I had to cope through that situation in order to feel safer, to feel okay. And then I took all of those coping skills and I brought them into my adulthood, and now I'm really successful, right? And so that's going to make everything okay. And then people find, oh, it's not going to make everything okay. I still have to go back and process through the things that initially led to these behaviors.
And that's hard.
No, it's so hard. It's so hard because I think some people come into therapy and they're like, okay, here I am, fix me. And I'm like, that's not my job. And so we talk about, like, what is my job? Well, my job is to help guide and help ask questions and help you process and maybe do a little bit of education here and there and offer some, you know, suggestions for the work to do in between now and next session and all of that. But it's, I think when people realize, oh, I actually have to do this work, I have to lean into this, I have to allow emotions to come up that are uncomfortable, I have to let myself cry sometimes, I have to journal through some things, I have to, it's hard work. It is not easy. And so I tell people that all the time, just to encourage them, like, you're doing hard work. And, you know, I think that anyone that goes into therapy or is working on themselves with a coach or whatever it is, like, I think they should be really proud of themselves for leaning into that discomfort.
Yeah. And challenging yourself in new ways, right? I mean, it's hard, and it's hard to acknowledge that this is an opportunity for growth when you've been successful in all these other areas. And you're like, wait, but this is hard, right? Like, everything else comes really easy and natural to me. That can even be a deterrent. So it's a really good point, leaning into the discomfort and realizing that it is a process for you to grow.
Which I think is why you have to normalize it, because especially if you're working with someone who's a high achiever, right? And you basically just said this is everything else has come easier because they worked, they kind of found a formula that works for them. And in therapy, there is no formula. I mean, there is on my end, but there's no formula for them to get through this any quicker. And there isn't a one size fits all. And I can't tell you how long you'll be in therapy. I mean, I can give you an estimation, but it may or may not be right. And so I think just helping people and normalizing the fact that this is going to be hard, this is going to be uncomfortable. And if they can expect that, then they're more likely to stick with it, because they're like, oh, she told me this would be hard.
Yeah.
So this is exactly where I should be. But I think that's really difficult for high achievers because they're like, okay, this is stupid. I'm done. This isn't coming easy to me.
Yeah.
And so just even encouraging like, hey, stick with the process. And with people that I work with that are, you know, on that recovering perfectionist, if I would say, mm-hmm. I often have to tell them like your new mantra is progress, not perfection.
Yeah.
And if you see yourself making emotional progress, you're exactly where you need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great advice. And being patient with yourself, right? Because yeah. it's not instantaneous. It's not like bringing your car yeah. to the mechanic, right? And getting right. it back the next day. And it's like, okay, right. great, it's working now. No, it doesn't. Right. So to your point, it's being patient, learning. For me, I always say there's a learning curve in terms of learning new tools, new skills, mm-hmm. new processes and mechanisms. But for, I think, a lot of women, it's also unlearning. It's unlearning
yes.
the harmful, toxic behaviors and the coping mechanisms that at one point did serve us, right?
Right.
They did help to protect us in right. some way. And so they were beneficial at one time, but now they are causing us, right? It's the question that you asked, what is it costing you, right?
Right.
And how is it impacting your life? And to be able to step back and reflect and say, okay, this is something I need to unlearn. I need to shift my thinking. I need to reframe mm-hmm. this sort of knee-jerk reaction I have when an uncomfortable feeling comes up, right?
Yeah. And that means that certain sessions, people are going to walk in and it's going to be one of those sessions where they feel crappy when they come in and they feel crappy when they leave. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that because it isn't like the mechanic. It's basically, it's an overhaul of belief systems.
Yeah.
And like you said, kind of maladaptive coping skills, right? Ones that serve them to survive in a certain situation, usually throughout childhood and kind of adolescence. And then once they get to adulthood, it's wreaking havoc on their bodies. And so it's like, okay, now's the time to really overhaul a lot of this. But it can be, not always, some sessions are great, but it can be very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And it's the only way to get past the pain is through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to feel to heal, right?
That you have old, to old feel, heal. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's so much yeah. truth in that. So Kristen, tell us a little bit about, you know, talk to us about belief systems. I think so often, you know, through our conditioning, societal, or, you know, our family of origin, we have these voices telling us that there's certain things we have to do, we should do, we must do. Talk to us a little bit about the belief systems and how we can sort of bring more awareness to them.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that we want to ask ourselves is, where did we get this belief, right? So to the point of, you know, asking for help is weakness, or I'm not good enough, or what I'm doing isn't good enough, right? For the high achievers. Yeah. The question is, where did you get that belief? Because you didn't just create that yourself. You got it from someone, you heard it from someone, or maybe subconsciously heard it from someone through a series of things that they told you or did. And so you want to ask yourself that question, because you also want to ask yourself, is this person a healthy source? Right? Like, if they made me believe that it's weakness to ask for help, why would they do that? Because most people that do that are dealing with things that they don't want to deal with. They don't want to uncover. And so they don't want you to uncover it either, because they want this system and this dysfunction to continue as it is. Right? And so I think asking yourself, not only where did I get this, but is this a healthy person? Do I need to be mm-hmm. listening to this message that they gave me?
Yeah.
Is really important. It's really yeah. key.
You know, it's so interesting you say that, because I reflect on, obviously it's something I talk about in the work that I do, is understanding where those messages have come from and if they're still valid, right? But you brought up another good point, which is going to the next level of, well, why did this person have that belief, right? I don't know that I've ever stopped to question, well, where did that person's belief come from? And to yeah. your point, sometimes it is the dysfunction in their own stuff that they carry forward. Mm-hmm. And obviously you want to see that for what it is. Sometimes it's just because they don't know any better, right? They didn't mm-hmm. know any different, or that's the way they were raised. And
right.
so it's a great point, is to question not only where that message came from, but what is the source, right? Mm-hmm. And really understanding where the origin lies. Mm-hmm. Kristen, another topic that comes up on frequently on a lot of the episodes that I do is the concept of neuroplasticity. And you and I are both kind of neuroscience, self-proclaimed neuroscience nerds. So talk a little bit about neuroplasticity and why it's important for high functioning women.
Well, I think it's important because it's the key to recovery. So to define kind of what that is that your brain has the ability to shift and to change and to do things differently all the way up until you leave this earth. And that's the beauty of the way that God created our brains, is that you can think one way for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And then you can go and start working on these belief systems, these thoughts of this is never enough and I need to keep doing more. And, you know, what if I'm not performing well? Or what if, you know, whatever the anxious thoughts are. And we would consider that kind of your pathway that you've been taking for a long time. In neurobiology, we call it your neural pathway, right? And while doing the work, what you end up doing is you end up shifting and creating an entirely new neural pathway. And so as a result of that, over time, over repetition, you're able to change the way you think, and it becomes the default of the way you think. So you no longer even go, oh no, I have to think a different way. You now think this new way, this healthier way that feels better, that feels more peaceful, that helps you create important shifts in your life. So that's the beauty of neuroplasticity, is that your brain can shift, your brain can change, you can teach your brain new things, you can think differently. And in therapy, what I love to see is people being able to make those shifts and creating new neural pathways so that they all of a sudden come into therapy and they're thinking completely differently and they didn't even realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's creating that new thought track in your brain through the habits, through the behaviors, right? Through the actions until it becomes ingrained, because it takes time, right?
It's not going to happen. Yeah. It's repetition. It takes quite a bit of time, which is why it's such a process, but it's also something that I've seen happen again and again, if you just stick with it.
Yeah. And the analogy I like to use is, you know, the route that you take every day, whether it's to work or to drop your kids off at school, you know, it's a route you take every day. You know it, you could do it in your sleep, you know, but one day it's jammed, right? There's construction, there's an accident, and you look at your phone and it tells you you're going to be there for an hour. So you can either accept it and be pissed off that you're going to have to sit there for an hour, or you can get off the next exit or take the next left and find a new way, right? So it's like rerouting, right? Your neural pathways to get to your destination. And I think it's incredibly powerful. So thank you for explaining that concept. We talk a lot about redefining success on this podcast. I would love to know, how do you define success for yourself? And how has that definition evolved or shifted for you over time?
Yeah. I would say for me, success is very much like I was talking about earlier. Like, am I living in alignment with my values?
Yeah.
So, you know, I value faith and family, and I value time with my daughter and my husband. I want to make sure that my people in my life know how much they mean to me, know how loved they are. And then everything comes after that, right? So it really is kind of looking at my priorities and my values and making sure that I'm living in alignment with those. And if I'm not, then, you know, I go through the same process that I take other people through.
Yeah.
And I would say that success for me probably used to look very similar to a lot of other people. Like, okay, I need to graduate with the degree, and I need to go get my master's, and now I need to go get the job, and now I need to, you know, get married and buy a house and do all. And it was very kind of culturally defined, I feel like. And maybe even, you know, defined by my own history with perfectionism, like, how can I create this perfect life? But now I feel like it's just a lot more peaceful. It's a peaceful definition of success. I don't have this pressure to perform, but I do look at myself and go, am I living in alignment with the things that I really value and bring me joy? Yeah. You know?
I love that. So living in alignment and that sense of inner peace and joy.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So powerful.
Yeah.
What's one thing that you want our listeners to take away from our conversation today? What's one thing you want them to consider doing differently or changing after listening to this episode?
Yeah, I would say You know, if you're someone who is kind of on that high functioning performance type of anxiety, I would just want to remind you that you don't have to live with that. You don't have to live with that forever. That is something that really takes some time. Take a couple hours even, or if you don't have a couple hours, take 30 minutes mm-hmm. and really assess, what are you experiencing? What are the symptoms that you're feeling? How is this impacting your life? What is this costing you? And if you've come to the place where you're like, I'm sick of living like this, then, you know, maybe seek out help. Like, it's not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of not being good enough. It's actually a sign of strength, of being able to say, you know what, like, I recognize that someone else can help me uncover some things that are going to help me create a life that I love. And I think really taking some time to think about, are you living in alignment with what you value? And mm-hmm. if you're not, find someone that can help you create that quality of life that you're looking for. Because anxiety, it's not an identity. It's not a badge. You know, it's definitely something that I don't think people need to be living with, but they are. So I would just encourage you to do some assessment, get some help, reach out, you know, because it's definitely not something that needs to be part of who you are.
I love that. It's so powerful. And recognizing that you don't have to live there, right, for the rest mm-hmm. of your life, and realizing you have a choice. Because I feel like sometimes we get stuck in that mode thinking we don't have a choice. Like, this is what I signed up for. This is the way it is. This is life. This is the way, you know, things have to be. And it doesn't. It doesn't. You have the power to choose and to shift. Is it hard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you need support along the way? Absolutely. Right.
Yes.
And to your point, you also mentioned it's hard to ask for help because so many of us were conditioned to believe that asking for help is a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so once you realize that nothing could be farther from the truth, that it's actually, to your point, a source of strength, it's a powerful shift. Right. And I think it's also important to recognize you're not alone, right? You feel alone. You might feel like you're the only person who's going through this, but you're not. You know, millions of people have gone through it before you.
Yes.
And hopefully not after you, because we want to shift that dynamic. But, you know, you're not the only person who's currently in that situation. And to be able to either tap into the experiences of other women or tap into the expertise of coaches or therapists or other professionals who do this work is going to be so important. So I think that's really powerful advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And really also just make sure that it's a good fit. I would say call multiple therapists or coaches, whoever it is you're going to go to, and interview them, you know? And so I would ask them the tough questions. I would ask them, you know, how can they help with anxiety? What does that look like? What do sessions look like? Make sure that you know who it is that you're going to be working with. Cause I think some of the deterrent too is that people have had bad experiences in therapy. And so that's turned them off to the entire therapeutic process. And not every therapist is the same, and not every therapist is, you know, great, unfortunately. So you kind of have to find one that is a good fit.
Such great advice. So important. Kristen, where can our listeners learn more about you and the work that you do?
Yeah, I would love that. So they can find me on my website. It is my name, kristenradke.com. So that's KristenRadke.com. And that's where they can find me. They can find out more about the services that I offer, as well as scheduling. I see clients right now in Arizona.
Perfect. Amazing. Yeah. Kristen, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your insights and your expertise. Love the work that you're doing. And of course, you can visit my website at giolacqua.com, reach out on Instagram at giolacqua. On the homepage of my website, you can download your complimentary copy of From Chaos to Clarity, a 30-day journal for self-discovery and healing. This is Gia signing off with gratitude for your time and energy. Our mic drops, but the movement continues. Until next time, your next chapter is waiting. Take care.
That concludes another empowering episode of Your Future Starts Now. Before we wrap up, I want to thank this incredible community of high-achieving women. Your energy, resilience, and commitment to growth are the driving force behind what we do. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate it, leave a review, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Your feedback fuels our mission to empower high-achieving women just like you. And of course, share your future starts now with the extraordinary women in your life who are also on a journey of healing and empowerment. Connect with us on social media, share your thoughts, let us know what topics you'd like to explore in future episodes. Stay connected on Instagram at Gia Lacqua. I encourage you to carry the energy of this conversation into your day and keep on supporting the incredible women around you. Until next time, remember, your next chapter is waiting.